From the Voice of America, this is Learning English Weekend. I'm Katie Weaver in Washington, D.C. It's Saturday, May 14th. Today on the show, we bring you a classic American story by the writer O. Henry. We also take you to the most visited national park in the United States. But first, we have some news about the Brazil Olympics and the Zika virus. Here's Mario Ritter.
Brazil is preparing to host the Olympic Games in August, but the South American nation may not be celebrating. Political problems and other issues have drawn attention away from the Games in Rio de Janeiro and toward the country's troubles. This week, Brazil's Senate voted to put President Dilma Rousseff on trial for manipulating the budget. She is suspended from office. Her replacement as acting president, Michel Temer, had to pay a fine for violating campaign finance laws. Brazil won the right to host the Olympic Games in 2009 under then-president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. The country is estimated to have spent more than $13 billion preparing for the Games and the 2014 World Cup soccer competition. Brazil's Olympic bid was expected to show the country's strength as a developing world leader. For some nations, hosting the Games is considered a chance to show the world a nation's arrival on the world stage. It also can showcase national unity. Yet Brazil's economy is in recession as oil and other commodity prices have dropped, hurting the nation's exports. Many Brazilians blame Rousseff for the recession and for a corruption scandal at the state-owned Petrobras oil company. As South America's biggest economy, Brazil is among the five BRICS nations. China, India, Russia, and South Africa are the other members of the group. They account for 40% of the world's population. They also combined to establish the New Development Bank in 2014, meant to fund infrastructure projects in the developing world. The BRICS economies, however, have seen reversals, as oil and other commodity prices have dropped sharply in the last 2 years. Brazil's economy shrank by nearly 4% last year. Brazil is a major exporter of raw materials, such as sugar, soybeans, coffee, and iron ore. Falling commodity prices have hurt its foreign trade. Brazil's imports from trade partners also have dropped. Prices Brazilians pay for goods and services have been rising. Inflation is about 10%. The political turmoil in the country has not helped the economy, which is not likely to restart growth this year. Economists say Brazil needs to put in place economic reforms aimed at improving the business climate and limiting public spending. It remains unclear how the Olympics will affect the country's struggling economy. Brazil's upper legislative body now must decide whether to remove Rousseff from office during this intense period for the nation. Rousseff denies any wrongdoing. She called the charges against her fraudulent and has called the impeachment process a coup against the country's democracy. Although Rousseff has been suspended from office for up to 180 days. Other politicians face questions over their involvement in the Petrobras scandal. Petrobras is Brazil's huge state-owned oil company. Federal law enforcement officials are investigating payments made to politicians of the ruling Workers' Party. The man replacing Rousseff, Vice President Michel Temer, has been discussed in the Petrobras corruption investigation as well. He faces questions about his own conduct and is considered disloyal by Rousseff's supporters. Renan Calheiros, the leader of the Senate, also has been named in the investigation as well. He is now second in line of succession to the presidency, according to AP News Service. Former House Speaker Eduardo Cunha had been a fierce critic of Rousseff. He had been second in line to the presidency, but he was suspended from office this month over charges of obstruction of justice and corruption. As Brazil prepares for the huge sporting event, it faces not only the political storm in the capital, Brasilia. The nation has a public health crisis in the spread of the Zika virus. Brazil reported its first case of Zika virus in May 2015. The World Health Organization said the Zika virus could be linked to 4,000 suspected cases of microcephaly in Brazil. Microcephaly is when babies are born with extremely small heads. It causes severe brain damage. The virus is spread by mosquitoes and has caused infections in Brazil and many other countries in Latin America. In February, the World Health Organization declared the spread of Zika a global public health emergency. It warned pregnant women not to travel to places where the Zika virus is active, including Brazil. After the outbreak, Brazilian officials sent 200,000 troops to homes to deliver information on how to get rid of mosquitoes. In areas that will be used for this year's Olympics, city workers sprayed chemicals to kill mosquitoes and their eggs. An estimated 500,000 visitors are expected to come to Brazil for the Olympic Games. This has one public health official questioning in the Harvard Public Health Review whether the Games should be moved or postponed. I'm Mario Ritter.
Next up, our series on national parks. Ashley Thompson, where are we going?
Today, we visit a national park that stretches across two southern U.S. states, Tennessee and North Carolina, and two mountain ranges, the Blue Ridge and the Appalachian. The area is known for its wildflowers, autumn colors, waterfalls, and black bears. It is also known for the blue-colored mist that hangs above mountain peaks and valleys. It looks like smoke and gave the area its name. Today, we are exploring the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. We are hardly alone on our journey. The Great Smoky Mountains National Park gets more visitors than any other.
Starting in the 1920s, local citizens began working to protect the land. Ann Davis moved to Knoxville, Tennessee in 1915. She soon came to love the Great Smoky Mountains. In 1923, Davis visited some of the national parks in the western United States. She proposed creation of a national park to protect the Smokies after she returned home. Ann Davis entered politics to help push the idea. In 1925, she became the first female from her county to serve in the Tennessee State House of Representatives. She proposed a bill to permit the purchase of more than 30,000 hectares of land from the Little River Lumber Company. That was the first huge purchase of land used to create the national park. In 1934, Tennessee and North Carolina gave the federal government more than 300,000 hectares of land for the park. The Great Smoky Mountains National Park was established on June 15, 1934. But the official dedication did not take place until 1940, when President Franklin Roosevelt spoke at a ceremony within the park. The ceremony took place at the Rockefeller Monument on the border between the two states that provided the land. Roosevelt said that day, "It is good and right that we should conserve these mountain heights of the old frontier for the benefit of the American people."
Most years, around 9 million people visit the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. It is the largest area of protected land east of the Rocky Mountains, and it is one of the few national parks that is free to enter. The park has over 1,000 kilometers of trails, more than 110 kilometers of the world-famous Appalachian Trail cuts through the Smokies. So, you might share the trail with a hiker in the middle of a months-long walk from Georgia all the way north to Maine. Visitors also share the park with a large population of black bears. The park is one of the biggest protected areas in the eastern U.S. where wild black bears live. Black bears once roamed a huge part of North America, but the populations suffered because of habitat loss. Scientists say around 1,500 black bears live in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Park officials work hard to protect them and warn visitors not to get close to bears or leave behind trash that would harm the bears.
Many visitors come to the park to view wildlife. One of the most popular places to do so is in an area called Cades Cove. Here, visitors can see white-tailed deer, the dog-like coyote, turkeys, and yes, black bears. Cades Cove is a valley. It has a long and rich history. The Cherokee Indians used to hunt there. The first European settlers arrived in the early 1800s. In the 1830s, around 270 people lived in Cades Cove. Today, many kinds of historic buildings and structures remain in the valley, including log houses, barns, churches, and a working mill. Cades Cove is also an excellent place to view wildflowers. The park is famous for its wildflower diversity. Within the park are more than 1,500 kinds of flowers, more than any other national park in the country. Another famous spot in the Great Smoky Mountains is Clingman's Dome. It is the highest point within the park. At the top of the 2,024-meter-tall mountain is an observation tower. It offers viewers a 360-degree view of the Smokies and surrounding areas.
Unfortunately, the park has faced air pollution problems. The pollution harms the views atop Clingman's Dome and other scenic spots in the park. The Cherokee Indians who lived in the area used to call these mountains Shakonaji, which means place of the blue smoke. Today, the blue-gray smoke that surrounds the mountains is no longer pure. Some of it is just air pollution. Most comes from electric power centers and cars. The pollution damages native plants and water streams. It also affects the views from the scenic overlooks. It can make the mountain colors appear less bright and beautiful. The National Park Service suggests that visitors by car consider using public transportation from the city of Gatlinburg, Tennessee. A trolley car takes visitors to many stops within the park. The millions of visitors to this beautiful part of America have a special responsibility to preserve the land that many worked so hard to protect.
Every week, we bring you a classic American story. Today's is Mammon and the Archer by O. Henry.
Old Anthony Rockwall, who made millions of dollars by making and selling Rockwall soap, stood at the window of his large Fifth Avenue house. He was looking out at his neighbor, G. Van Schulite Suffolk Jones. His neighbor is a proud member of a proud old New York family. He came out of his door and got into a cab. He looked once, quickly as usual, at Anthony Rockwall's house. The look showed that Suffolk Jones was a very important man, while a rich soapmaker was nothing.
"I'll have this house painted red, white, and blue next summer," said the Soap King to himself. "And we'll see how he likes that."
And then Anthony Rockwall turned around and shouted,
"Mike!"
in a loud voice. He never used a bell to call a servant.
"Tell my son," he said when the servant came, "to come to me before he leaves the house."
When young Rockwall entered the room, the old man put down the newspaper he had been reading.
"Richard," said Anthony Rockwall, "what do you pay for the soap that you use?"
Richard had finished college 6 months before, and he had come home to live. He had not yet learned to understand his father. He was always being surprised. He said,
$6 for 12 pieces.
"And your clothes?"
"About $60, usually."
"You are a gentleman," said his father. "I have heard of young men who pay $24 for 12 pieces of soap, and more than 100 for clothes. You have as much money to throw away as anyone else has. But what you do is reasonable. I myself use Rockwall soap because it is the best. When you pay more than 10 cents for a piece of soap, you're paying for a sweet, strong smell and a name. But 50 cents is good for a young man like you. You are a gentleman. People say that if a man is not a gentleman, his son can't be a gentleman. But perhaps his son's son will be a gentleman. But they're wrong. Money does it faster than that. Money has made you a gentleman. It has almost made me a gentleman. I've become very much like the two gentlemen who own the houses on each side of us. My manners are now almost as bad as theirs. But they still can't sleep at night, because a soap maker lives in this house. There are some things that money can't do, said the young man, rather sadly. Don't say that, said old Anthony. Money is successful every time. I don't know anything you can't buy with it. Tell me something that money can't buy. And I want you to tell me something more. Something is wrong with you. I've seen it for 2 weeks. Tell me. Let me help you. In 24 hours, I could have $11 million here in my hands. Are you sick?
Some people call it a sickness.
Oh, said Anthony. What's her name? Why don't you ask her to marry you? She would be glad to do it. You have money, you're good-looking, and you are a good boy. Your hands are clean. You have no Rockwall soap on them.
I haven't had a chance to ask her, said Richard.
Make a chance, said Anthony. Take her for a walk in the park, or walk home with her from church.
You don't know the life of a rich girl, Father. Every hour and minute of her time is planned. I must have her, or the world is worth nothing to me. And I can't write to say I love her.
I can't do that. Do you tell me, said the old man, that with all my money you can't get an hour or two of a girl's time?
I've waited too long. She's going to Europe the day after tomorrow. She's going to be there 2 years. I'm allowed to see her alone tomorrow evening for a few minutes. She's coming to the city on a train. I'm going to meet her with a cab. Then we'll drive fast to the theater where she must meet her mother and some other people. Do you think she would listen to me then?
No.
Or in the theater?
No.
Or after the theater? No. No, Father, this is one trouble that your money can't help. We can't buy 1 minute of time with money. If we could, rich people would live longer. There is no hope of talking with Miss Lantry before she sails.
Richard, my boy, said old Anthony, I'm glad you're not really sick. You say money won't buy time? Perhaps it won't buy all of time, but I've seen it buy some little pieces.
That evening his sister, Ellen, came to Anthony to talk about the troubles that lovers have.
He told me all about it, said Brother Anthony. I told him he could have all the money he wanted. Then he began to say that money was no use to him. He said money couldn't help him.
Oh, Anthony, said Ellen, I wish you wouldn't think so much of money. Money is no help for love. Love is all-powerful. If he had only spoken to her earlier, she could never say no to our Richard. But now I fear it is too late. All your gold cannot buy happiness for your son.
At 8 the next evening, Ellen took an old gold ring and gave it to Richard.
Wear it tonight, she said. Your mother gave it to me. She asked me to give it to you when you had found the girl you loved.
Young Rockwall took the ring and tried to put it on his little finger. It was too small. He put it inside his coat in a place where he thought it would be safe. And then he called for his cab. At the station, he met Miss Lantry.
We must not keep my mother and the others waiting, said she.
To Wallack's Theatre, as fast as you can drive, said Richard to the cabbie.
They rolled along 42nd Street to Broadway, and from there to 34th Street. Then young Richard quickly ordered the cabbie to stop.
I've dropped the ring, he said, getting out. It was my mother's, and I don't want to lose it. This will only take a minute. I saw where it fell.
In less than a minute, he was again in the cab with the ring. But within that minute, a wagon had stopped in front of the cab. The cabbie tried to pass it on the left, but a cab was there. He tried to pass on the right, but another cab was there. He could not go back. He was caught where he was and could not move in any direction. These sudden stops of movement will happen in the city. Instead of moving along the street in their usual orderly way, all the wagons and cabs will suddenly be mixed together and stopped.
"Why don't you drive further?"
said Miss Lantry.
"We'll be late."
Richard stood up in the cab and looked around. He saw a stream of cabs and wagons and everything else on wheels rolling toward the corner where Broadway, 6th Avenue, and 34th Street meet. They came from all directions, and more were rolling toward them. More and more were caught there. Drivers and cabbies shouted. Everyone on wheels in New York City seemed to be hurrying to this place. "I'm very sorry," said Richard. He sat down again. "We can't move. They won't get this straight for an hour. If I hadn't dropped the ring, we..."
"Let me see the ring," said Miss Lantry. "Since we really can't hurry, I don't care. I didn't want to go to the theater. I don't like the theater."
At 11 that night, someone stopped at the door of Anthony's room.
"Come in,"
shouted Anthony. He had been reading and put down his book. It was Ellen.
"They are going to be married, Anthony," she said. "She has promised to marry our Richard. On their way to the theater, their cab was stopped in the street. It was 2 hours before they could move again." "Oh, Brother Anthony, don't ever talk about the power of money again. It was a little ring, a true love ring, that was the cause of our Richard finding his happiness. He dropped it on the street and had to get out and find it. And before they could continue, the cab was caught among the others. He told her of his love there in the cab. Money is nothing, Anthony. True love is everything."
"I'm glad the boy got what he wanted," said old Anthony. "I told him I didn't care how much money..."
"But, Brother Anthony, what could your money do?"
"Sister," said Anthony Rockwell, "I'm reading a book with a good story in it. It's a wild adventure story, but I like it. And I want to find what happens next. I wish you would let me go on reading."
The story should end there. I wish it would. I'm sure you too wish it would end there. But we must go on to the truth. The next day, a person with red hands and a blue necktie, whose name was Kelly, came to Anthony Rockwell's house to see Anthony.
"That was good soap we made," said Anthony. "I gave you $5,000 yesterday."
"I paid out $300 more of my own money," said Kelly. "It cost more than I expected. I got the cabs, most of them, for $5, but anything with two horses was $10. I had to pay most to the cops. $50 I paid to two, and the others $20 and $25. But didn't it work beautifully, Mr. Rockwell? They were all on time, and it was 2 hours before anyone could move."
$1,300. There you are, Kelly," said Anthony, giving him the money. $1,000 for you, and the $300 of your own money that you had to spend. You like money, do you, Kelly?"
"I do," said Kelly.
Anthony stopped Kelly when he was at the door.
"Did you see," asked he, "anywhere on the street yesterday, a little fat boy with no clothes on, carrying arrows?"
Kelly looked surprised.
"No, I didn't. But if he was like that with no clothes, perhaps the cops caught him."
"I thought Cupid wouldn't be there," Anthony said, laughing. "Goodbye, Kelly."
That was Mammon and the Archer by O. Henry. Thanks for joining us today on the Voice of America Learning English Weekend. I'm Katie Weaver.